What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Weekly Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve, and I'm here with...
Coach Nick.
And we're here with Coach Nick, and we are going to be chatting to you about things that we wish we knew when we were starting training. And,
yes.
You know, there's times that I feel old. You know, there's times that I feel that, I wish that I could jump back in my time machine and go back to the beginning of my days of training when I was a teen in my school gym and starting that the exercise program, that fitness thing, and joining the culture of fitness. And, you know, the fact is I can't go back in time.
No, we can't go back in time.
But as part of growing up is we learn things and we adapt things. And, you know, some things that we may have put up on a pedestal as the holy grail of fitness and health and everything in between, later on we learn that maybe that is not as exciting as it once was, right? Yeah.
Definitely. And there are better ways.
There's better ways. And we've all done it. We've all done it. And even if you are the best challenger out there, the best trainee out there, the best fitness professional, the best coach, the best whatever, you've probably been through the motions of fitness, the cycle of fitness, and how we improve it from there. But look, let's jump right into the deep end.
Yes.
of things that I thought were the holy grail, the things that I thought were the only way that we could get fit and healthy. And probably the big tiger out there is probably the low carb movement or the keto movement or the other one, the higher fat movement, and being the only reason why you can lose weight. So we see that across media, you know, it's in the movies, it's in social medias, you know, that you have to cut out carbs right now. And the carbs are the devil, carbs are bad, and carbs are the reason why you're fat. And I believed that for a really long time.
So did I.
You know, I was in my early 20s and I thought the only way this keto thing is the magic pill. Like that is the only way that you get that you gain fat or lose fat. Like that's that your hormones play a major role in it. The carb insulin model is the thing, right? I believed all of it and I bought into the hype and I did weird things. I did the bulletproof coffee. Remember that thing?
Yeah, I did too, Steve. I really did. Yeah.
The bulletproof coffee is when you have a black coffee, it has to be black.
Yes.
And you add a stick of butter to it.
Yep.
Mm.
And you have that for breakfast.
Breakfast with your scrambled eggs and bacon, drizzled with olive oil because it has to be high fat. And somehow that made you lose weight, right?
Yes.
Magic in it. Yeah. And I quickly learned that that's not really the case. And look, in all fairness, I did lose weight.
Yeah, right? So did I. That's right. You do.
It's not via the mechanism that we think.
No.
So for me, put yourself in my shoes. I was early 20s and I wanted to lose weight because I was unhappy with how I looked. And I thought that the low carb movement was the thing. I thought keto was the thing. So what did I eat? I had mainly roast chicken and vegetables. So, you know, no carbs in there. Some olive oil and some fats and some almonds in between. And for breakfast, I'd have my bulletproof coffee. And what I found was through the strict rules that I gave myself, you know, not having any sort of fun foods, not having, you know, the pizza and the burger and the beers and things like that, I started to lose body fat. And I thought, this is great, right? And then what happened was I went and started gallivanting overseas, right? So I went on a nice trip around the world and I started to add foods into my diet. You know, I was out, I was partying, doing the things that you do as a young 20-year-old, and I would go and have like the slice of pizza in Italy or have the burger somewhere else around the world and things like that.
I'm glad you did though. I'm glad that you broke it to do that.
I'm really glad
you got to experience that.
And you know what happened?
What?
Nothing happened.
No, right? Because you were probably moving quite a bit around. You know, you tend to walk quite a bit.
So here I was. I went from this super strict keto diet being like, carbs are the enemy, carbs are bad. You know, carbs are the reason why I lost weight or gained weight or whatever it was. And then once I introduced them back again, my body composition didn't change. If anything, I looked better. And sure, I wasn't exercising as much while I was on holiday and traveling overseas doing those things, but it wasn't a day and night. It wasn't like, whoa, I woke up and I was 5 kilos heavier because, or, you know, 5 kilos fatter or anything like that because I had a burger or a pizza. And then as a good scientist, when I came home, I didn't really go back to this keto thing I was doing. I just kind of ate as I normally was. And, you know, I still had the six pack. I still looked lean. I still looked happy. And I was like, hey, this is interesting.
And that's so much better for living life because it means that you don't just live your life in the gym. You've got a completely well-rounded life, which is our aim.
So did you go through a similar movement, Nick? Did you go through the low carb?
I was at one point when I had a photo shoot and I wanted to drop some weight, I was advised to get that done pretty quickly, and it happened really quickly because my body's quite responsive to everything, you know, so it's straight away, and I saw myself dropping quite a bit of weight, and I thought that was the answer. And then I thought, well, nobody's telling me to do this, but I think I'm just going to keep doing this because look at me now. And it actually ended up being quite destructive for me because, you know, more and more food groups were cut out. And actually, that's probably the reason why I was dropping things, because when you restrict yourself to a small amount of food groups, there's a few things that happen. One is that obviously you have less things to play around with, but two, you actually probably end up getting a bit sick of them, so you eat less naturally anyway. Like, how many roast chickens can you eat?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think we've, like, you really touched on it, where both of us lost weight while we're following these diets.
So we're not saying that you don't.
You know, it's not like you, it's not that you don't, double negative on purpose. It's not that you don't lose weight. You definitely lose weight when you follow a diet.
Yes.
And generally all diets relatively work if you follow them, if you adhere to them. Some are more beneficial to others. Like for us, maybe having really clear and defined rules, like this food group, yes, this food group, no, which led us down a path where we were eating less food.
Then ultimately that's why.
And then now, you know, as we have become a little bit more educated, a little bit more understanding, a little bit more experienced, experimenting with different things, we start to understand and go, hey, it doesn't really matter what we do as long as we follow the principle of energy balance, where we're trying to get ourselves into an energy deficit, more specifically like a calorie deficit. And what happened is we went through that process when we reduced our carbohydrate intake, so that we went through that.
Yeah.
Now, if I am going to manipulate my body weight, my body composition, I do it in a, maybe a more intelligent way, where I don't completely neglect food groups. You know, I would enjoy things like a burger on the weekend and still be comfortable with where I'm going. I would enjoy things maybe having a glass of wine with my friends for dinner or something like that. So I can still be human, still stay on track, helps me with adherence. Then now I can diet for longer without all the negative effects that come from cutting out food groups.
Yeah.
You know, just quickly for me, I lost my libido. I was always having aggressive mood swings.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of my friends because I ended up pissing them off because I was just a bad person. Well,
you never wanted to have any beers with them, did you?
No. Or even just like I was that person at parties. And if anything, I was becoming that person where I was like, you know, looking at people's food being like, are you going to eat that? Do you know that having that slice of bread is making you fat? Like, yeah. I was that person. I didn't say it, but my eyes said it. So I became probably quite a toxic person to be around. I probably engulfed myself into the cult of the keto cult. And then, you know, my performance went down. I started to lose lots of muscle. So I was, you know, unable to train hard. I was unable to see progress. And sure, I looked lean, but I just looked skinny.
Yes. And that might have jolted you out of it. Did that jolt you out of it?
Yeah.
When you lost your muscle?
Well, if anything, that little trip away and I came back and then I was like less strict on myself and I started training, I was like, ooh, I got a new PB.
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel stronger. Ooh, look at my biceps, right? Mm. So then as I introduced all these foods again, I was like, I can train hard again, feel happy and have a beer on the weekend. This is a win, right?
Yes.
So as I evolved over time, now I understand it's all about energy balance. And we do need all these different food groups, even down to the micronutrition, like carbohydrates, you know, have really great sources of things like folate and vitamin Bs and stuff like that. So we need the fiber that comes from these foods. We need the nutrients that comes from these foods,
the fiber,
right?
Fiber as well. Thank you very much. Like, it's not a pretty sight if you're not having fiber. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So it's actually, from a health point of view as well, not just even a weight or looks or anything. It's actually for your internal health.
Yeah.
You do need your fiber, and those sorts of diets do restrict that quite a bit.
Absolutely. Did you go on any other wacky diets along the way? Well, wacky's maybe a bad choice of words. But did you go on any other diets along the way?
The no-food diet, like as in just really cutting down all the calories, thinking that that was the answer. There was a time when I worked in an office and I wasn't going to the gym, wasn't lifting weights. So I would basically walk. It was near Albert Park Lake in Melbourne. So I would walk that two times in my lunch break. Okay. I would be a little bit late, but that'd be like a good 6 to 7 Ks. And I'd also walk the botanical gardens in the mornings.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And then barely eat anything. I would have, for some reason, my diet was a can of chickpeas and a can of tuna for lunch. And that was it. That's what I was doing, that kind of a thing. Didn't really even understand what was in those things because actually they're quite not good foods, but just that was it. So, of course, I was thin because I wanted to look good in office clothes. That was all that mattered. So, and everyone used to say, oh, gosh, you look your thing mm-hmm. in the office. So that was what I wanted. And that was obviously not conducive to any kind of sporting performance whatsoever. And I'm sure a lot of women can relate to this, you know, just really, that was before I had the kids as well. So it was just all about myself and fashion and wanting mm-hmm. to be skinny.
Yeah.
But I didn't also look necessarily that good in a bikini. That's the funny thing, because I didn't have any muscle.
Yeah. But that kind of leads on to that next point. You know, if we're kind of talking about cardio, I think we've all kind of been there where we do have this over-reliance on cardio, thinking that if I want to lose weight or modify my body composition or look like a bodybuilder or look good in a bikini or in the swimwear or whatever it is, you know, we some reason have to over-rely on cardio.
Yeah.
And, you know, that cardio could be that I need to do 10 walks a day or walk 15, 20 kilometers a day. Well, that could be that you over-rely on things like HIIT or sprinting or something like that to get that change.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
You know, I've been there. Me too. Yeah. Heck, even just not too long ago when I was prepping for a bodybuilding show, and this is going back maybe 4 years ago, I was deep in forums on like bodybuilding.com and things like that. And I was watching bodybuilders speak about it because I didn't have any idea. And, you know, for some reason I found a thread of people talking about how you shouldn't train legs leading up to your show because that changes the definition in your legs for some reason.
Right.
So what they were talking about was using things like a Stairmaster to get definition in your legs as opposed to doing resistance training with your legs.
Yeah.
So, of course, I bought into that.
Oh, whoa.
So, leading up to my show, I didn't train legs and I was doing just a Stairmaster, right? Yes. Because for some reason, I thought that was a wise thing.
Yes.
And this isn't too long ago, right? This is maybe like, 4 or 5 years ago, right? How times have changed.
Oh, gosh.
And yeah, you know, if you see photos of me up on stage, sure, I've got legs, they're there, but you know, they could have been so much more if I did continue to train legs as I was going through these last phases of my cut. This was maybe like 4 or 5 weeks out.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of just stopped training legs and I was just focusing on things like the Stairmaster. For some reason, I think it goes down to a video of, I think it was like Sean Roden, who was doing a Stairmaster and you see his calves just popping.
Yeah, right?
You might know the video. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, one of those silly things you see on Instagram or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, that's the only way to get calves.
Well, that's like any Instagram thing. Like, look, there's so many women out there with like absolutely amazing glutes and quads and things, and they're kind of on a Stairmaster, and, and you think, well, even, you know, I do a lot of stuff, and I think, oh, well,
maybe I should do that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I mean, even with all of the background that we've got, you can still easily go down the rabbit hole because we've got so much information available to us. It's hard to know. Different things work for different people.
Yeah.
And but there are some principles, some basic principles that it's good to kind of get under control straight away. Like cardio, it's not going to fix any problems.
No.
If you're training for a massive endurance event, then that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's not going to fix. Like if you had a bottle of wine last night, the cardio is not going to fix it.
No.
Sleeping would be better.
Yeah.
Actually, and just get hydrating and getting back on track. So things like that, I've learned that over the years. And sometimes my fallback position might be to go, hang on a minute, because I teach the spin. It's like, well, I'll go crazy because I know that I wasn't that good, you know, but it never works. It actually makes me more inflamed and further away from what my goal is.
Yeah. You know, even just speaking about cardio, like right now, people ask me, you know, what cardio do you do? As in, you know, Steve, what cardio do you do? And I feel bad when I tell people that I do no cardio. As in, what people's view of cardio is, like, I don't do it. I don't have a treadmill or a bike or a Stairmaster. I don't go for runs or anything like that. The only thing I do is walking. So I would walk my dog in the morning, likely in the evening with my partner. It's a great time for us to go and do our steps. And I have a pretty good understanding of how much physical activity I do throughout the day.
Yes.
So for example, maybe a day like today or this recording, I might be sitting down for longer today. So I might compensate by, you know, actively going for a walk. And heck, after this recording, we might go for a walk, right? So I don't necessarily track my step count down to the number, but I've got a pretty good understanding from my experience. But in terms of cardio, I don't do cardio. And I think in the past, I used to rely on it a lot. But for my goals, I've become like very aware that what I'm trying to achieve, cardio isn't helpful.
I agree. Even though my entire business it's based on cardio for myself, I actually have to be very aware not to do too much at all. Because I need to maintain every bit of muscle that I've got for my show.
Yep.
I cannot afford to lose the muscle. It. And that's the first thing that goes.
Yep.
It just does.
Yep.
So.
And we often see that resistance from challengers who join the challenge. So either previous challengers from years ago who might have been in the same mindset where I was, you know, years ago, over reliance on cardio.
Mm.
This was maybe 5 years ago that maybe they've done the challenge and then they join the challenge again, being like, hey, this is different. It's like, well, yes, it is. And that's okay because we've learned and grown. The whole industry has gotten smarter. Or there's some people who have been influenced by media, talking about movies, talking about social medias, these types of things, thinking that, hey, I need to do lots of cardio. Why doesn't the plan have cardio? Can I do more cardio? It's like, well, you could if you're training for an event, if you're a triathlete, if you're a marathon runner, yeah, sure.
That's where you need to do it because you need to get yourself match fit for that sort of stuff.
But if you're trying to transform your body, if you're trying to, you know, quote, look like a bodybuilder or look like a fitness model or, you know, have the tone and shape in your body or be lean and ripped, we don't need to do these things.
No.
Right? It really comes down to focusing on resistance training, maintaining as much muscle as we can, which is what we do now. You know, I focus predominantly on resistance training and then focusing on energy balance where we are consuming less energy than we expend, or the other way around. If you're trying to gain mass, we're trying to have more energy than we expend, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I think cardio has changed a lot. And I think in terms of training, my training has changed a lot. And I think if I could jump back in a time capsule to back when I was 16 in a gym, if anything, I would probably say that I would continue to eat what I was eating. Where in general, you know, I was young, I was active. I'd say, Steve, keep eating what you're eating. But in terms of training, I would probably be so much smarter with my training.
Me right? too. I always think back because I'm so into the bodybuilding now. I think if I'd have started when I was 18, where would I be?
Where would I have been?
Yeah, that's what you can't help think that. But then knowledge has evolved because who would have been around back then to teach us that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So
hopefully me, hopefully in my time capsule, like very back to the future, I can talk to myself and like, you need to do this.
Yeah.
I think if I was to give myself one tip when I was first starting, like one thing to say, Steve, do this every single day and you'll be, you know, whatever, jacked, lean, ripped, whatever. I think I'd just tell myself to track your training. Right. The really simple thing is just to track your training.
Yeah.
And I think this comes down to the idea of collecting information, right? Because right now I wish I was able to look back at all the journals or, you know, entries or training programs that I've done in the past, know exactly, you know, what reps, what sets, you know, what RPE I used, what exercise I did, at what time point, what time of day I trained. I wish I knew all these things rather than just going through the motions where I thought I was almost too good to track things. I'm like, oh, I don't need to write things down. I remember my program. I'll just go to the gym and do it. I'd probably tell myself, track my training, write things down so that you can now review the past, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because usually when we first start out in anything, we think we're the exception. It comes back to that thing where it's like, I don't need to. I know everybody else does, but I won't need to because I'll remember.
Yep.
So definitely a good point. Yeah, if you could see a graph of it all, it would be great to be able to look back and see what's going on.
If you could tell yourself one thing, if you go back in your time capsule, Back to the Future style.
Yes.
In the DeLorean, but flying back in time, where would you tell yourself?
I would probably say, don't do everything. Pick one thing. It's not a lolly shop. Like you can, but it's not going to be sustainable. You can, like, and you're not going to be great at both. So like, say I was, when I was doing my Ironmans, I was also building muscle mass. I was like, that was when I first cracked double body weight deadlift. But it's like, imagine carrying that muscle for that amount of time over an Ironman. So I just thought I could do everything. And now I realize, I look back at photos and I'm like, you could have done with 10 kilos less of whatever just to complete that run without dying.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who tells you that you're great or like what coaches you've got. You can't do everything. You need to choose. And you need to have a look at the body type that you might like to have. Figure out what sport resonates with you. Just because I was okay at cycling doesn't mean that I had to become a triathlete, you know. So I would go back and say, you're not, once again, you're not the exception. You can't do everything. Don't try and max yourself out at every turn for no reason, really. Because I guess it's sort of when you first start in the gym, it's a bit like, it's a bit like being at school, but like in a cool way, like where you can be the coolest kid. So it's like, lolly shop and you just go crazy. I would say pull it back and have a look at the physique that you really want and try and work towards that.
I think for me, I was definitely caught up in ego.
Yeah, it's all ego.
Not ego as in Freudian ego, like who I am, but ego as in like, I'm in the gym, I need to be the biggest guy going around. And maybe that was, you know, young, male-orientated Steve, and maybe that was part of me developing into a well-rounded human in society. but when I was in the gym, I was all about ego. And I was the classic ego lifter, where it was, how much did you lift? Bro, how much you benching? Like, oh, I bench more than you, right?
That's just general bro conversations.
So. And it was built into my program where I was doing things like chasing PBs. Yeah. Every time I go in the gym, I'd be like, okay, like, can I get another one rep max, right? Yeah. And looking back now, I'm like, geez, that was stupid.
Right? Yeah, definitely. Because the thing is, high rep training, people just don't, because it's all about now, you know, that it looks good. It's glamorous to show your one rep or even five or six reps, but it's not going to get you necessarily the aesthetics that you want. No. So it's okay to back off the weight and actually go higher with the reps.
Yeah.
So I've learned that. And also feel each rep.
Yeah.
You know, really feel it. Feel when you're in the gym and you will realize that you're not as good as you think you are. You know how it's like, oh, I could do 2 hours and I can do this and do that. But if you actually sit and feel it, sometimes you can within 5 minutes, you can go, oh, I'm gassed.
Yeah. So I remember, let's say talking about deadlifts, and you kind of said like chasing the double bodyweight deadlifts. I remember there was one point in time where I was chasing something like 3 plates on the deadlifts. So that's 140 kilos. Mm. And I would have been maybe, I don't know, 90 kilos at the time. And I thought I was like king it, right? Mm. Where I was like, yeah, I can do 140 kilos. And I had the works. I had the belt and the wraps and everything. I had a headband going, like music blaring. Like, yeah.
I wish I had a picture of that.
And I thought I was the man, right? Yeah. And like, I remember like every time I'd go in the gym, I'd be chasing that number where I was like, yeah, okay, I've got to do it, yeah. And then like once I beat that, I'm like, oh, I've got to do the next one, yeah.
You've got your accent there too, your bro accent.
Yeah, my bro accent. Every time I go in the gym, I'm like, yeah, I've got to beat that number. and for some reason, it wasn't a successful session unless I got that one rep max. I know, right?
And that's the other thing, like defining what success means in the gym, it's not just about that one number.
No. And then like, you know, if I was really reflect on that, training or whatever I'd call it. It wasn't even training. It was just, I don't know, going and doing a thing. You know, I was sacrificing like range of motion to try to get that movement.
Yep.
I was sacrificing other body parts to try to get that lift. I was just maxing out and just fatiguing myself for nothing. And then now, I strip it back. And if anything, that like 140 that was my max is almost like my warm up now.
Yeah,
where I'm like, okay, grab the bar. You know, you've got 10 reps. All right, okay, you're just getting into it. You know, no wraps, no belt, no headband, no music. It's just what I do now. And it was very much once I took a step back to think about what I'm doing, feel the exercise. What am I trying to achieve? All right, it's a hip hinge. I'm trying to train my, you know, glutes, hamstrings, my back, my posterior chain, completing it with a good range of motion. Then I was able to make progress. And then now, you know, we could hit 2.5 times our body weight because we're like, oh, this is what we do. It's strong, it's stable, it's significant. Rather than back when I was in my early 20s, risking injury after injury after injury. On the edge.
All the time. And then, it's good actually when those numbers become common, and it's not, you actually rarely hit them.
No.
The thing is, that's when you know that you kind of have more of an understanding of what's going on, when you sort of know where you need to be. Without, and also, not every single, it's not a roller coaster ride where you have to worry every time that you're going to be injured when you're in the gym. That's another thing. No. So, I mean, when I first went in, I think someone said to me years ago, if you're not scared every time you go in there, then you're not really training. And you do take that on board. But the thing is, you don't have to, do you?
No.
You might be going in there and just doing some side raises or whatever you're doing. You don't have to have the fear of God in you every time you go in.
Yeah, you don't have to stare Cthulhu in the face being like, I'm going to do this.
It's not like that. It's not, the world isn't watching you with a camera and that kind of a thing. You actually need to take a step back and relax into it sometimes and say, there are days when you're not going to get the glory. You're just going to put in the work and it's not very exciting.
No.
Most of the training that's really good for your body composition is freaking boring.
It's boring. Yeah.
It is.
You know, it's no like glamorous like 100 meter sprints. Like if you watch someone like Usain Bolt and he's training, it's you know, pretty boring.
It's no chalking up and you know, like all the photos the hype. And clapping the chalk and everyone's around you. That's maybe a once a year thing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I remember
unless you're a powerlifter.
Unless you're powerlifter. Yeah. Well, even in powerlifting, then, that's right. Like I don't remember where I heard it, and I would like to claim that it was my own quotes, but it's not my quotes. Mm-hmm. It's that you only have a certain amount of one rep max attempts in your life, right? There's only a certain amount of times that you can attempt a one rep max. And, you know, you might be lucky you get, you know, 100 chances at a one rep max in your life. Maybe you get 50, right? But every time you go for that one rep max, it shouldn't just be an every week attempt. It should be something that you build up to, such as a powerlifting event. You know, maybe once a year you're maxing out. If anything, we're training in this suboptimal area, you know, maybe 90% of our maximal effort, because when we do go to that max range, you know, we don't see any progress. It's a waste of time. It just makes us tired. We risk that injury, that overload injury. And then often that high level of effort breaks down our quote form, whatever that is, where it's not anything that's conducive to something that's powerful.
No, you know? And the reward isn't as big as the effort that you expend to do that. Yeah. So when you are trying to change your body composition, like we are in the challenge, it's just not worth it.
No.
It's not worth it.
No.
Not even emotionally for you, because so what? You hit it, you know, everyone says well done, but then you set yourself back, you know, so you're a couple of weeks back. Because it actually takes, that's the other thing, it takes longer to recover than you think it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because your brain might go, oh, I'm feeling better, but it actually takes 2 or 3 days to recover from like a big pressing session.
Yeah.
You know, or a pulling session.
Talking about like recovery, I think that's a big one. Oh, absolutely. I think that's something I like neglected a lot.
Yeah.
And then even just managing all the other factors that come into recovery. Yeah. And, you know, all the way down from, you know, if we think of recovery kind of like a big pipe, you know, we've got all like the water going into the pipe, and that's kind of all the stimulus that we're giving our body. Then we've got the pipe itself, which is, you know, kind of slows down all the water and it has to kind of come out the other side. And then we've got all these other stresses in our life, you know, poor quality sleep that adds like a filter in the pipe, so it slows the water down. We've got maybe like, you know, work related things. We've got, you know, our jobs in there, and it all adds little barriers for that recovery process. And for me, firstly, I was stuck at the front of the pipe, but I was shoving everything in it.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing like crazy amounts of volume of exercises. I was doing loads of like advanced techniques like drop sets and negative sets and partner assisted sets and all these other weird and wacky things that you see on the gram and on bodybuilding forums and stuff.
As you can do.
Basically, I was over relying on those things, seeing no progress, of course. Then I was not even focusing on things like, you know, good quality nutrition, good quality sleep, all these good recovery factors. And then I was trying to go in for a PB, and no wonder I wasn't seeing progress because I was just so tired and I didn't know I was tired.
No, that's the other thing. Because when you're young or young in a training age, it's almost uncool to recover.
No.
It's like it's just not cool.
Yeah.
But the older you get, the cooler it becomes.
Yeah. Like maybe not old as in age, but training age. So like myself, I would say that I'm an old soul when it comes to training. You know, I've been lifting for, you know, 10 years plus. So like for me, it's like, it's not rest day, it's recovery day.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like that's the other thing. It is really cool to have a recovery day. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It's not cool to be in the gym every day, all day.
You know what's cooler than that?
What's cool?
Deloads.
Yes.
Deloads are cool.
I'm having a deload week this week. It's very cool. Very cool. Absolutely.
So you're not cool unless you know what a deload is and you're having a deload.
Yeah, deloads are cool. Deloads are very cool. And you always come back better from that. That's the thing about all recovery. You need it to actually then be better than what you were.
Yeah.
You'll never know unless you do it.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of people who go, and I'm sure there's lots of people, it's because it used to be me. Lots of people is me. I used to just go, I don't need it. I
feel good.
I will do 7 days a week of teaching spin, and then I'll go in and do all my weights. But it's like, well, why can't I complete that properly? Why is my form breaking?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I so grumpy? Why am I a naughty, mean mum that yells at the kids too quickly?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Why can't I get that 140 deadlift? I did it last week. Why can't I do it again?
Yeah.
I think, like, if you think of your capacity as, like, a fuel gauge, right? And, you know, there's, you know, 50% fuel, there's 60, 70, 80, 100%, right? As we get more and more fatigued, like, that fuel gets drained down. So you might be cruising right now at, like, a 50%.
Yeah.
But then your maximal effort mentally is that 100%, but really it's only 50%. So yeah. you might be putting in 100% effort, but really you've only got 50% of your capacity. If you spend a little bit of time to let that fuel gauge recover back to 100%, then you could you can match your 100% intensity with your 100% capacity, right? And I think so many of us are stuck in this cruising mode being like, oh, well, Steve, I'm giving it a 10 out of 10 effort. I'm giving it 100%. It's like, yes, you're giving it 100% in your intensity,
yeah.
but your capacity right now is only cruising at 50% because you haven't given yourself time to rest and recover. And maybe that's the reason why you've plateaued. Maybe that's the reason why you're not seeing change in your body. Maybe that's the reason why your weight isn't improving, or it's maybe regressing. You're not as strong as you were because you're just cruising at this 50% rate. And I was doing that
when
I was training every single day, and I was trying to push as hard as I can, and it was always like 100% effort, but then eventually I was just cruising at 50% for a long time without knowing. And then once I took a few days of rest, I kind of went through that super compensation, which is a little bit of a sports physiology for you, and I came back and I was like, oh geez, PB after PB after PB. I was like, I feel good, this was great.
Yeah,
I think that's so important.
Oh, me too. I think it's the key. And I think that if anyone's listening and thinking that they don't want to, you'll eventually come around. So come around straight away to it,
mm-hmm.
because it's the most important thing to do. It's like, that the saying of most of your gains, well, the things that are going to happen in your body are going to happen when training is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's not during training. No. It's what you do around your training that makes the training count.
Yeah.
You can pretty much cancel your training out if you're going, say you do your training, you jump in the car, you have a coffee straight away, and you're all in your head and you're stressed and you don't relax and you don't eat and you don't do those sorts of things. It's almost like it becomes, it does, you don't get worse, but you don't get better.
Yeah, yeah.
You just sort of stay in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because people are so busy these days, and you think to yourself, wait a minute, it's like I should have the reward because I've done the training.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm owed this reward. But then if you don't put in to the bank the other way, it's going to just, you won't get worse, but you will not get better, will you?
No.
You won't see those changes. You won't be in that sort of the top 50 challenges, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting you say that, because I think when we start an exercise program, we join fitness, training is often a post effect. Like, I've done maybe I've overindulged for a long period of time. I need to, quote, burn it off. I need to, exercise because of what I've done in the past. And that might be a beginner kind of mindset, thinking of training as an after effect. And then as we become more advanced, we think as training as the pre-effect.
Absolutely.
Where we go, I've trained now, I'm then not going to ruin my training by, overtraining or, that's doing so X, true. Y, and Z.
Such a good way of putting it.
Yeah, so we kind of move this priority of, training after to training before this effect. That's maybe a mental shift, because now you're right. Like if I'm training after that, I'm focusing, all right, when's my next meal? When's my next bolus of protein? Like what am I going to do to rest and recover? Like how am I going to get myself ready for the next training session? Yeah. Those types of things.
Yeah. I think it's I'm not sure if it's when you've been on the stage and you've actually dieted down and you've seen what muscle is actually under there,
mm-hmm.
and then you go in your head, you go, if only I had eaten after this training session or recovered a little bit more here, because where have my quads gone? Wait a minute, they were there, or was that all body fat? That kind of thing. When you actually get to see your frame underneath it all, you kind of get that perspective, and then you get some regrets, and then you'll never do whatever it is that you do again for the next time. I think it's just that visual of yourself. So take it from me, I promise, it's all under there, and you want to look after it the best you can. If you're investing your time in building it, you want to, it's like your little gold coin pile. You don't want to just give it away.
No.
Yeah.
One other thing that I used to rely on a lot was, which most of us rely on, is training my abs.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I'd always have my little ab circuit at the end and things like that. I always used to do lots of ab work. And then I stopped because I just couldn't be bothered anymore. And then now, at the moment, I do next to no ab training.
Me too.
I don't do any... Yeah. Well, keyword of language.
A bit of core stuff. Yeah. But
keyword of language where I don't do any direct ab work.
Yeah, but all of our training is...
That's right.
Kind of, the compound lifts and things. You need your core. Absolutely. For everything.
Yeah. So for me, when I see challenges, being like, where's all the ab work? And it's like, well, you don't need ab work. Your abs or your core, your midsection is actually being used with almost every exercise.
Yes.
Like if you are going to deadlift or to squat or overhead press or bench press, like you need your midsection to be on. So your core and your abs are being used in every single exercise.
Yes.
And so now I don't do any direct ab training. And you know, there is actually a little bit of data that suggests that, where we do see lots of beginner and intermediate trainees get some really good abdominal growth just from an introduction to a full body exercise program without any direct ab work. Yes, if you are in this, you know, high level, advanced level, maybe like you and I, where our abs have developed to a certain point where to continue to see growth, yes, we might need to give direct ab work, but at the moment, I don't do any. I don't know. The only time I do ab work is to film ab videos.
Yeah, me too. If I'm doing the circuit with everybody, yep, I'll show. And yep, that's pretty much. So you could say 5 to 10 minutes maybe a week. And that's demonstrating. Mm-hmm. So that's not even really concentrating on my own training.
No.
I can see them to see what I need to do. So the first thing is to, if you see what's under there, mm-hmm, once you start to see them, you go, well, for me, mine stand out quite a bit, and I'd say that's genetics, but also probably just development over the years of all the
training,
the compound lifts, the big lifts. You have to, because otherwise, what, you'd fold in half if you're not using your core.
Yeah, like I love it when people say things like, you know, I have a weak core, and I get this in the clinic. People come to me and they're like, oh, I've got a weak core. But they're standing there.
They're standing upright.
I'm like, you're standing upright. You've got a core. If you didn't, you'd fold over. Yeah. Right? So that's always a little like funny thing I kind of say to myself. But you know, I've gone and done quite a lot of extra training, like for example in Pilates, right? And you know, through Pilates, you've probably done some Pilates yourself, and maybe you're listening to this and you've tried Pilates.
When I was pregnant, I did it a lot on a reformer. I loved it.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the movements we do are very much, you know, ab-based movements, and that's fine. And what I learned was that all this time training abs, I was never actually training my abs. I was training things like my hip flexors or things like my neck kind of flexors and things like that. And I wasn't actually, actually doing like, you know, lumbar flexion, which is what we do when we're training our abdominals. And, you know, I see people online doing things like, you know, high rep ab crunches or something like that. And they're doing it, you know, for speed. And it's like, well, what are you trying to do? If you try slowing it down, actually focused on flexing your spine and shortening the rectus abdominis, then you're doing ab work. At the moment, you're not doing ab work.
There's a lot of momentum there. You see a lot of ab work that's done with a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
And usually like maybe people do 100 reps of something when if you slowed it down, you could probably manage 10.
Yeah, yeah. Like my favorite thing I see online, which I always have a little giggle at, I'm sorry if you do this, is things like the Russian twist.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're like balancing on their sit bones or their sacrum or the iliac and their legs are like up in the air and they're kind of just like, just twisting their arms from side to side, and their torso isn't actually moving. Like they're just holding this hip flexor like V sit position, and they're just like rotating their arms from side to side.
I see a lot of people do that in any kind of classes, and I sort of that's where I bring in the stage experience, and I say you've actually got to, you know how with when you're on stage you've got to actually twist.
Yeah.
And you've got
quarter to turn to the right.
Exactly. So I like to, you know, say you've actually got to stay really still and move around.
Yeah.
So look, ab training is not going to get you the abs. It's honestly, it's the food.
Yeah.
It's the food with the abs. So that's something to think of. And
everyone has abs.
So people go, oh, I just don't have them.
Yeah.
They're there. It's different body fat percentages. You can see abs at different stages.
That's like right.
You can be reasonably lean and still not see your abs if they're just not structured that way. Some people, you just can't see them until you're like really, really lean.
Really lean. Yeah.
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 Abs aren't everything either.
No.
I love them, but I'm lucky because but there are other bits of me that I don't have. Mm. So, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah. Mm. And most of the time, you know, when we do think about those low body fat percentages where you do see your abs, sometimes that's really difficult to see progress when you are such a low body fat.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've come to terms with, where I think in the past, maybe it was like an identity issue, like me being, you know, Coach Steve, the fitness guy, that I needed to be lean all year round. And what I found was that I wasn't able to see progress over time because I was so focused on constantly trying to diet and stay lean. But then now I've become accepting of, hey, it's okay to kind of go through, you know, a cycle where maybe you go through a mass phase, a maintenance phase, then a lean phase, and then you kind of cycle through it. And through those mass phases, I'm able to grow muscle, I'm able to change my shape, and then when I lean down, I'm actually see change.
I agree. I think I actually must say one positive about all the lockdowns and things, I think that that gave everybody who was into bodybuilding a chance to actually chill out,
mm-hmm.
and all of us got to put on maybe a bit of muscle mass as well as some body fat, because mm-hmm. that's all we had to do. There yep. were no shows, there was yep. nothing. So I'd say that like the next batch of shows, you'll see a lot of development because we've all spent some time
resting, recovering, growing.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. So,
and often that's the first goal in fitness, is like, oh, I want everything. I want to look like that person. And maybe that person doesn't understand that, okay, to get to that position, you do need to take some time, a few cycles of training. And we see it in the challenge. Like people are unsure of what program to choose. And they go, oh, well, I want to build fat. I want to build muscle and lose fat. And I want to get fit. And I want to be healthy. And I want broader shoulders. I want to be toned. I want to be fit. That's it. And it's like, whoa, you said a lot of things right now.
That's me too. You know, like, me too. I want to do all those things too. Right, yeah.
But for me, you know, I can't see these really drastic changes. For a recomposition myself, I'm unlikely to recomp because I'm at a high level of, muscular development. So for me to gain muscle, I need to go through quite a classic bro like bulking phase, and then go through a bro shred phase so that I can continue to see growth. It's unlikely for me to stay in a really lean position and continue to grow muscle. Right. And that's something that you come to terms with, being like, okay, I'm okay with the process of it, where it does cycle and does change. But that's the fun of it, right? As you go through different phases.
And you can really also, once you get to know that, it doesn't take long. Once you're in a little bit of a cut, then you can see changes quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, that if everyone could understand that it's okay, you've got control over it. Mm-hmm. It's just about manipulating the variables. But you don't have to stress if you're going through a cycle where you want to put on some muscle. It's that's probably the harder bit, because you're going to be working pretty hard in the gym. The dieting bit's actually reasonably straightforward,
mm-hmm.
you know, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's that bad, that bit. I think just knowing where you're at in the cycle is very important, mm-hmm. and just honoring that as well. Like if you need some time to build, then take that time. Like, you know, people say, oh, I want to see my glutes. Well, maybe you can't be in such a big calorie deficit to do that. You might actually need to build your glutes by eating.
Yeah, you know? And then go back through.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think talking about dieting again, I was a big advocate, like once my kind of in the keto phase and afterwards, I was the guy that would be promoting the idea of eating clean, right? Got to eat clean. Whatever that meant, right? And often that meant that I was resorting to foods such as, you know, the roast chicken or grilled chicken, and, you know, this quote, like rabbit food of just like, you know, a little bit of lettuce and, like, I don't know, maybe a capsicum if I'm lucky, right?
Yes.
So I'd always be like, eat clean. And it was like, you know, no dressing, like no sauces, no flavor. Like, oh, flavor's bad for some reason. And it was almost like an identity thing, where it's like, oh, well, I'm rough and tough. I eat, you know, really bland food because that's who I am, and rah, 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 like this. It's like, well, that's what the bodybuilders eat. Yeah. They have chicken and broccoli and rice if they're lucky, eating clean. And, you know, that went through down a cycle where maybe I taught myself that any food with any flavor was bad for some reason. I taught myself that salt was bad for some reason, even though salt's really important in life. I thought that anything that was fun food was bad food. And it was this idea that, you know, you have to eat clean to lose weight, which is just completely nonsense, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I still remember the first day that I learned that about calories and what they actually meant and macros, and I went and got something I don't know that I'd never hadn't had for a long time, some sort of an ice cream, and I went, this is not going to make me fat.
This is
a bunch of numbers that you can slot into certain facets of of your day and move forward.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I waited.
You're like, ooh.
I'm like,
it's like waiting.
I've eaten this thing.
You've eaten it, and then you're sitting on the scales waiting for the number to go up.
Yeah. And it's like, whoa. And there probably actually was, like you were saying, that super conversation. It's probably even that happened. You know, I actually got lighter, which, you know, that's a whole other, other topic. But it's interesting because it is a bunch of numbers.
It is.
And you need to discover that. Mm-hmm. And then what you need to do from that is go, I can't eat like a complete dork forever. Mm-hmm. Like, because you go through that phase where you go, I can eat 10 tubs of Halo Top for my day. And but then you've got to go, wait a minute, let's factor in the nutrition.
Yeah.
So there's a delicate balance there. You can have a bit of fun when you find out about macros and what they mean. And no foods are good and no foods are bad.
No. there's a one account on Instagram I really enjoy. I think it's called My Fitness Chef. And he puts up like comparison photos where he would label one food as quote healthy.
Oh, I love that.
True. And then one food as labeled as like bad.
Yeah,
and
he might find the link to that because that's really good. Yeah, yeah.
And what he would do is you'd put up maybe like a bowl of, I don't know, like Cocoa Pops, right? He'd work out the calories in Cocoa Pops. And some, for some reason, Cocoa Pops is labeled as bad food, right? You know, high in sugar. Sugar doesn't make you fat. You know, it's low in fiber. Okay, sure. You know, whatever. Like Cocoa Pops, he labels it as bad. It has, you know, X amount of calories. And then he'll compare that to something that is labeled as healthy. You know, maybe it's like muesli or something like that. Oh, it's healthy. It's good for you. It's labeled as organic or something. But then the calories are almost equal. If anything, the Cocoa Pops are lighter lower in calories, and he has a whole, that's basically his whole account, he's labeling things like that.
Yeah, that's so true. And once you can get to know that, there's that. And also, oh, the other thing I have to say based on that as well is get to know your portion sizes as well, because you can think that you're eating super healthy, and I often get this with clients that say I'm eating super healthy, and they probably are, but the thing is, 10 sweet potatoes doesn't mean that, you know, you've eaten within your calories just because it's a sweet potato. Or a muesli, or those things that are labeled healthy, or even like healthy organic peanut butter, quote unquote, unless you're measuring that out.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not a free ticket.
It isn't a free ticket. Yeah. And you know, I mean, if you'd have to be insane, but you could probably eat enough broccoli to put on weight if you don't. You need to you need to be aware of your portion size, although veggies are, you know, hard to overeat because they're volume foods. But you do need to, even with the no food is bad, no food is good, you still need to be aware.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even just some of the labels that are put onto brands, such as, oh, you know, this is vegan, or this is organic, or this is light, and it's like, okay, cool. I'm sure that it's a nice labeling word or marketing word, but then we've got to really look at the label, because then we go, okay, well, if this item is sold as like a health food product, but then it has more calories than a Mars bar, and you're like, well, why would you be eating this, you know, fancy, healthy nut bar or something, but then there's a Mars bar that has fewer calories, and it's like, well, I mean, you have the choice now between the two. I think you said it before, though, where it is a little bit of a balance, where we can't take the piss.
Right? No, you can't. You can try, but the thing is, that's not going to make you feel any better.
No, and that's what it comes down to. Where if your goal is purely body composition goals, sure, it is energy in, energy out. But if you are considering life factors, if you're considering your sports performance, your energy levels,
and your family, if you've got to cook for kids and stuff, you can't really just pull out 10 tubs of ice cream. I mean, you could, but then that's not going to be good for anyone.
No, so, and you probably feel like crap.
The thing. So what you've also got to remember, I think, and that's important as well, just is you can do anything. Like, it's not that you're not allowed to have stuff.
You can.
There's no good, there's no bad.
No.
So when I'm saying, like, you can have all the food, the bad foods, but then you've got, well, not bad, you, sorry, that's silly. You can have all those foods that are a bit more calorie dense, but then you have to then also figure out, what do you want? Because sometimes that's not going to lead you in the right direction towards your goals. It's not going to make you feel great. That Mars bar might not provide you, it's enough, like, probably for a steak and some vegetables and that sauce that you want, or for that Mars bar. Perhaps not a steak, let's be sensible here, let's think about it. But so you have to realize that also, like, you've got to nourish your body as well.
That's it.
So go through that phase where you go, wait a minute, this is all numbers, I can have whatever I want, but what you want and what you need are not necessarily the same things.
Yeah. Like, you'll probably feel better by having like a big bowl of veggies as opposed to having that ice cream.
Yeah, which is why the challenge is good with the meal plan. With you know, we often get people saying, "Oh, two serves of grain and that sort of thing." But when you look at it, it's actually so well balanced in terms of what your body needs.
Then
you can have your extras, and you can factor them in. You can swap it around, and that's how you get empowered. But also, you'll find that you need less and less of them once you start to get to know what your body actually needs.
It's a tough process.
Yeah, definitely. But I think
it's definitely hard, I guess, just to kind of start to summarize this podcast. You know, there's many things that I wish I knew when I started, but then I wouldn't be where I am now if I didn't do all those things that right now I, you know, cringe at or laugh at or poke holes at and stuff. So,
I wouldn't change a thing.
No, I wouldn't change a thing.
Even injuries, because I think even those things, you don't want them, but they make you better.
They make you learn.
They make you better. A better athlete. Makes you work on your weaknesses.
Yeah. So, look, if you're listening to this and you're feeling that, oh, geez, you know, I feel like an idiot because I did exactly what, you know, we spoke about.
But don't. We did it. And, that made us into what we are. Yeah. So, we can't say that anyone's anything because we've actually done those things.
Yeah. So my tips to you, if you feel like you're not progressing in your transformation, your fitness, your health, if you feel like you might be doing something that later on you're going to regret or cringe at, is to, well, one, accept it, where you go, hey, if I do option A, that's not forever, right? I can test things and trial it. And I do it now. I test weird and wacky things I see online. I see if it works for my body. If not, I'd be a good scientist. And then I could tick it off my list, being like, yeah, I tried that. Didn't work. I liked it. It did work. These were the pros. These are the cons. These types of things. So that's number one, is accept what we're doing right now. And, you know, commit to it. Commit to what you're doing right now so you can test it.
Yeah.
The next thing I'd recommend is to go down the path of continuous education. And you're doing this now. If you're listening to this podcast, you're in a position where you are putting yourself in the forefront of learning things, listening to other people, learning with other people. Maybe you have people like mentors. Maybe you look at people like us as your mentors, where you listen to us and watch our videos and such to learn from us. But there's a plethora of personalities out there across social medias, online, YouTube, Instagram, where you can learn and you can start to make opinions and grow. Right?
Yes. We're still doing that every day.
Every day.
That's the other thing.
And then maybe we're on the other side where we are looking at original sources of information. Like for me, I spend a lot of time on Google Scholar. I'm reading textbooks. I'm doing things to learn stuff. So maybe I've got a better bullshit detector than most people. Yeah. But
it takes time though, doesn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But look, if you are feeling like you're stuck in a rut, that's okay. Be a good scientist, test things, learn from things, and then we grow. And don't feel like you need to be at the peak level, because what is peak level? I don't know. I haven't reached it there yet. You don't need to be doing everything perfectly. There are things that you can take a step back to move forward.
Yeah, little improvements every day.
Absolutely. Thanks for watching, guys. And we'll catch you next week for next week's weekly podcast. Chat. See you guys.
Bye.